Welcome to Fiction Authors Talk Books, or Fat Books Podcast. This episode, I'm talking with the stunning Shyla Walker about the industry and some red flags to watch for. This is a safe space for people of the industry to talk about the industry, the craft, and we'll definitely go off script. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to see your favorite author on here, send them this link, and they can get in touch with us at fatbookspodcast@gmail.com. We take all authors who write fiction and have been published as long as they're polite. Thanks for joining us, and on to the podcast.
All right, I hear you now. Now what do I do?
You're in, that's it.
Okay, why was this, was not that complicated last time.
Have, your computer went on strike?
I don't know. I have not done anything different, but it was not that complicated last time. Maybe it was because I had to uninstall and reinstall.
Has your computer updated recently and maybe Windows reset some settings?
Well, I had to get a new computer. Maybe that's what
that is absolutely 100% the answer. Yeah.
I forgot about it because my computer died.
Oh, isn't that the best thing ever?
It is. You would think getting a new computer, a more advanced computer, would make it a smarter computer instead of it being a dead computer. I got it. It was not cooperating with me.
I've been through 5 laptops to get a new laptop this past. When did I start? My old laptop was kind of dying, and mostly it was an issue of just kind of the size of it, because I tend to edit in bed. Long story short, for Black Friday deals, I went and got a computer. It's a new laptop, and because of the Windows, what are we on? Windows 11 didn't like the AMD graphics card, and it couldn't keep updating. I had to go through 4 different laptops that I'm now on the 5th, and I'm waiting for this one to.
Oh, no. Yeah. Now, the first one I ordered, I always order refurbished because I'm trying to minimize carbon footprints and stuff, and I'm trying to minimize how much I add to the junk in the landfill and stuff. But the first one I ordered did not power on.
Jeez.
But they had me a new one like within 5 days. So, but other than that, it's fine. But and that was the first time that ever happened. I've been ordering refurbished laptops for probably 15 years now.
I agree with trying to limit your carbon footprint. I've done it in other ways, but like computers and cars, I kind of go with my grandpa on this one that like refurbished certain things are in or used cars are just somebody else's problem that you don't have the full history of.
Well, the thing with my laptops, it's not just about carbon footprints. I've really been following a lot of the stuff that's going on down in the Congo, and one of the things that really adds to a lot of the violence that's going on down in there, we have been pillaging their resources a lot, and cobalt goes into a lot of our technology, and the only way we effectively can help is to stop buying so much new technology. Recycling our phones and recycling our laptops. If you can buy refurbished phones, and if you can people who go out in there, they have to get the new iPhone every single year, they have to get the new Samsung every single year. Make them last as long as you can.
I don't do that. Mine's like 3 years old. I think the Samsung I had before, my iPhone's 3 years old, the Samsung I had before, they were like, does this even update anymore? I was like, it works, shut up. Like,
yeah, I'm the same
way. I only switched
way.
Because I couldn't get cell reception at my apartment with Sprint, and I had to switch to Verizon, and they wouldn't let me switch over my Samsung. I had to get a different phone.
I get them when they refuse to stop taking battery charges, and I always buy refurbished. And I buy refurbished laptops because if you buy from a reputable, reauthorized dealer, I mean, because they take them back all the way to factory settings, and they install quality equipment on them, I've never had a problem with it.
I got a refurbished in college, and it was just a nightmare. I am a shit magnet, so I bought a new laptop, and I had to get the 5th one finally freaking so like I recycle my electronics. I don't, you know, just trade them out like candy. I do my best, but at the end of the day, I need to keep my sanity and mental health, and I am not that technology affluent, so when it starts giving me different things, I just
technology is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I like it one day, and the next day I'm cursing it. Like,
it's supposed to make everything so much easier, and it does.
Yeah, it does, but then it messes up something else, so it's like
Pretty much.
So how is everything else going? What else is new with you?
Well, I'm putting together my first Kickstarter.
Okay. I know what that is, but I don't know if it for books. I've never.
Yeah, well, it's crowdfunding for books.
Okay.
I kind of got the idea in my head, a Golden Angel. We're friends on Facebook. Mm-hmm. She's a erotic romance writer, does a lot of BDSM type stuff and some really spicy type stuff. Mm-hmm. I got the idea from her because I had seen some projects she had done with another writer I'm friends with, Shayla Black, mm-hmm. and some of her projects have just really, really taken off, and I started paying attention to that, and I got the idea in my head, well, it's been more than 10 years since I first put my first urban fantasy book out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe I ought to look at the idea of doing a special edition of that. It's one of my most popular series, if not my most popular series out there, and I own all the rights to it. Well, I license the Audible right, or I also license the audio rights to Audible, but everything else is mine. Mm-hmm. And I got it in my head to mess around with that and see what would happen. And so far, it's going interesting. I haven't started yet, but you
sorry, that interesting took a dip the way you. It's going interesting.
It's a lot of work. It's a there's a learning curve to it, unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, I ended up joining a Facebook group. That was what Golden Angel recommended I do it, because I have an idea that I still want to do one there, but it's an anthology kind of idea, and that's a bigger mm-hmm. project than I can do on my own.
Yeah.
But I wanted to first do something on my own to see how I could navigate the platform, and it's a lot of work. I mean, I would not recommend anybody do something like that as their very first writing project.
Yeah,
I mean, first writing in itself is a pain in the ass. Trying to do Kickstarter in and of itself is a pain in the ass. So trying to do two giant, massive pain in the ass projects, oh my goodness! But some people try, and I'm not going to say people don't try and succeed, but I think the only like
have the booze ready.
Yeah, and I think like only 40% of projects on Kickstarter fund. Now, a lot of the people.
Oh, really? I didn't know it was. It was there was a possibility for denial, so it's not like GoFundMe where everything just kind of goes through.
Right.
Or actually, I don't know if that's true. I'm not familiar with either.
The thing with Kickstarter, you set a funding goal. It can be anything you want, like $500, or it can be $1,000, or it can be $2,000, or $20,000. But if you do not meet your goal, they do not charge the people who pledge to back.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, so knowing what to set it at, and yeah. Oh, that's a spicy yeah. meatball.
So that's kind of a big, that's kind of one of the things that's part of the learning curve. You have to know, you have to set a realistic goal, but you have to set a goal that is possible for you to cover your the cost that you're going to have. You don't want it to be too high, you don't want it to be too low. If it's either or, you could be out a heck of a lot of money, and if it's too high, you won't meet your goal. So that's been me. I've been trying to find, you set it up in tiers. Mm-hmm. The first, you have to have a product that you can sell. You can't set it up like GoFundMe. Hey, I want you to give me some money so I can turn around and pay for this. Or I've had health problems. Can you give me money to keep me going for the next few months?
It's not just a straight donation. There's always a
right.
product with it.
Yeah, you have to give rewards out.
That's why I didn't realize I didn't know that authors were doing it for that. And so it'll be a special edition
of the first book of my urban fantasy series called Blade Song.
Okay, so like a hardcover.
It'll be ebook. There'll be an ebook tier. There'll be a trade paperback tier, and there will be a hardback tier.
Okay, so basically, the way to do it for authors, it's more like kind of a funded pre-order then.
Yeah. Now my highest tier is going to be about $140, and that's actually pretty low for Kickstarter thing. This is what I'm doing for my highest tier. It's going to be, my character likes to drink tea. I mean, it's not a huge part of the thing, but I was trying to think of something easy, simple that I could do. Mm-hmm. And it's you, me, and tea. We're going to have a half hour chat. They get a hardback, they get all the previous rewards, and then that teacup, I made the teacup.
Oh, fun.
And some of the tiers are a lot of these tiers are things that the things in the nicer tiers are things I made myself. There's hand beaded bookmarks. I'm going to be doing tote bags. I've got one of those giant heat presses where you can do your own t-shirts.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to use that for tote bags, not t-shirts. I don't like doing t-shirts. They're a pain in the ass, and I don't want to have to worry about sizes and confusing them and stuff. So, and the fun thing is, I got the idea for this teacup, the glass etching on it. That's just acid etching. You get a stencil. Now, they have to be special kinds of stencils.
Right.
And you got to be careful doing it. But you just basically use this acidic cream, and it has, and you kind of paint it on. Now, you have to be very careful, and it does take practice.
Yeah.
But once you get that down, that's all that is.
Yeah.
And it's a heck of a lot cheaper than ordering 50 cups to get the cheaper price.
Yeah.
And sometimes 50 cups is sometimes not that easy to find, and you're still spending $250-$300.
Oh yeah, people don't understand how easily the swag adds up and stuff. And
oh yeah,
I've had people be like, I can't believe you don't send out Christmas cards anymore, because I used to when I was a new author, because that's what I was told, like authors do that. But I got feedback so many times that people were like, I don't really care about a Christmas card from the author I read, like I tossed it. And then I was sitting here like, why did you put your name on the list? And they were like, well, you know, free stuff. But, you know, I figured I'd get more than a signed Christmas card. And I was like, all right, well, that took me like a week to do. So, but, you know, by the time you order all the cards and the stamps and everything, it was.
Yeah, that is one thing I never heard that people that we were expected to do, sending out Christmas cards. Oh, my goodness.
I think that's one of those things that it depends where you started and who was your quote unquote, you know. I don't want to say older sister or, you know,
mentor type thing.
Yeah. Or, you know, take you under your wing. But also, I'm very sure that I got a lot of bad advice when I was starting out just to screw with me.
Unfortunately, that just kind of goes with it. There's a lot of bad advice out there.
Yeah.
And for me, if it involves spending money, a lot of times I threw it out the door unless it was something that was crucial to the career.
Well, you know, it seemed, you know, not everything was a social media heavy, and it seemed like a little bit of something that maybe was, I don't want to say older generation, but it seemed like a nicety that could still be a thing. And
I get that.
You know, I just think that, but let's be honest, there was a lot more, well, I'm sure there still is toxicity, but I talked to some of the newer authors or the authors who haven't been doing it as long as you or I, and you've been doing it longer than me, I believe.
Oh yeah. 20 years.
Yeah. So you've been doing it a bit longer than me even. And, when I tell them some of the stories off the record, they're like, I'm sorry, they did what to you? Who did? These are other authors. I'm like, yeah, luckily there's just so many authors and so many different genres now that it's not like we all trip over each other. Like when it was, you know, ebooks were still new, and it was still, you know, the old dogs or whatever. And, you know, the only way was fighting for agents and all that kind of crap. And, yeah, it was a lot more of everybody trying to sabotage everybody and the elite system of who had what publisher and all that. And I look back on it now and I just shiver, like, I can't believe that was ever allowed or that was ever what it was. And, as we're all writing about
unfortunately,
love.
Unfortunately, that kind of infighting and backbiting and stuff still happens. It still goes on. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'll never end. There will always be horrible people. Like,
because people think that it's a competition. It's not a competition.
Yeah.
I mean, some people, the only way they can feel good about themselves is by tearing other people down. And it doesn't go away when you reach what you would think would be a respectable amount of success. I mean, you've hit the New York Times bestseller list multiple times. You are a well-established author. You've got huge swaths of fans and everything. You're a well-respected name and you will still continue to tear down and bite down, bite at somebody else's heels. You will try to blacklist them. I mean, I'm sure you heard about, did you hear about the debacle with Readers Take Denver?
Okay, I just recently heard of that conference. No, I didn't hear about the debacle.
They're comparing it to the Firefest. Did you hear about Firefest a few years ago?
Yeah, I think everybody in the world and a few planets heard about Firefest. So the Readers Take Denver is all a crock of sh-
Well, the 2025 event was canceled after more than 225 authors who were supposed to come next year pulled out. You really should look it up. But some of the worst things that happened even before the event started, like one author who was planning on going, she started asking questions about the massive expenses for promo they kept being asked to spend. She started asking questions. She's a new author. She hadn't ever done anything before. She had already shelled out the money for the table. They were being asked for more promo for swag and stuff and goodies to be donated. And she said, this is a lot of money. Is this normal? She was just like, well, hey, look, this is kind of a lot of money. She didn't ask anything untoward. She wasn't casting aspersions and everything, but when she asked in the group, she got attacked for it and she was basically blacklisted.
Oh, wow. Okay. So now we're moving on to warning stories and for authors to red flags.
Yes.
I mean, yes. That is fairly typical, though, because when you do even romance readers, when I was in Chicago, I mean, they did expect you to have swag at your tables. You were expected to give away so many print books.
This wasn't no. This goes beyond.
Yeah.
I mean, way beyond. This wasn't this wasn't author swag that you were expected to bring for your own. This was stuff they expected you to donate to the event.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's normally completely optional. So, yeah. That is a red flag.
It was not. This was not what should you bring of your own? This is we expect you to donate this, but they didn't couch it and expected. They said, well, we're asking for this, but that it was nonstop. And once you donated so much, they kept asking you for more.
Oh, geez.
I mean, I've heard stories that some people donated upwards of $4,000 or $5,000. Some people donated several thousand dollars. One person donated cookies, or two authors donated cookies with a QR code on the back for a free book that was supposed to go to the readers. And they ended up in the presidential suite that Lisa Renee Jones had.
Yeah.
And the cookies ended up being eaten by volunteers, the narrators, and authors.
Oh, my.
Alcohol was donated by authors.
Oh.
That was supposed to have a free round on us. The alcohol was supposed to be free.
Mm-hmm.
They charged for it and pocketed the money.
Oh, my.
Authors paid like $100 for drayage service so that books would be carted to their tables so they wouldn't have to go look for them. When you pay that kind of fee, if I put that down, I would have assumed somebody had been hired for that and that money was going to them to cover the service. Doesn't that sound what you would expect?
Yeah, normally it's the coordinators of the event that you have to drop them off a day before, from what I am used to. You have to check them all in. They, you know, go through the steps of making sure that what you said you were bringing, you actually brought. They get it all, you know, checked out. It's the right books. It's not pornography or something you're giving away. And then they make it show up at your table for the hardship.
Right. And then it's a service. That's not what happened. They had volunteers. And you know how a lot of these volunteers are like older women who've got a little bit extra time on their hands, 50s, 60s, sometimes 70s. They were the ones who were dragging boxes of books around.
Oh, hell no.
And they were doing it right before the book signing was supposed to be starting.
Oh, hell no.
So they paid for free labor that they foisted off onto the volunteers.
Oh, hell no.
They did not have any security set up. So no wristbands, no lanyards. So parties, anybody could walk in. Anybody did walk in, including several guys from a military event that was scheduled to take place a couple days later. And there was at least one instance of sexual assault where somebody got groped.
Of course.
And then the Lisa Renee Jones's husband wrote it off and blamed the victim.
Oh, my. I don't know who that is, but that's lovely.
Lisa Renee Jones is the author who ran Readers Take
Denver. Oh, of course. Good job.
Yeah. There was one volunteer who physically laid hands on several people. One of them was a pregnant woman.
Oh, love. This gets better and better.
One and the pregnant woman was an author's personal assistant.
Holy sh...
And these are things that there are detailed accounts of this online. These are not just speculations that somebody said. These are things that I've actually read the accounts or I've seen the video. there was one reader, and this might have been, I think this was also a personal assistant. A volunteer put her hand on a reader or on this person and left a bruise on the person's hand.
Oh, hell no. Oh, this is like a frat party instead of a freaking come on.
One reader, and she's also a book blogger, and you'd probably call her an influencer because she's pretty big on TikTok. Her name's Well Read Nurse. Mm-hmm. She got quoted in several of the articles about it. This thing has started out with a post on a local Denver newspaper, and then it got picked up by the Denver Post. Then it got picked up by the Daily Mail over in the UK, and then it got picked up by USA Today. So this is like, Lisa didn't want negative publicity getting out, and that kind of out of the bag.
Yeah.
But this reader, well-read nurse, mm-hmm. she was having a medical emergency. She was,
poor girl.
She's either diabetic or has issues with hypoglycemia.
Yeah.
But she was sitting on the floor, so she would not pass out. One of the worst people you can get in the face of when there's a medical emergency is a nurse.
Yeah.
The only worst person you can get into the face of would be one, the mother of somebody
yeah.
who knows that their kid's having a medical emergency, or a doctor. Those are the only two worst people you could possibly cross.
Yeah.
But a volunteers were screaming at her because she had to sit down on the floor.
We've gone from ways authors can fund books and projects to red flags of the industry and issues we have. So you brought up your audiobooks and you sold the rights. I actually got involved in the Kindle Direct Publishing beta testing for their Audible program. Have you heard about this?
I'm not sure.
Do you do Kindle Direct Publishing or do you?
Yeah, I do KDP.
Okay, so I don't know if it's open to everybody yet, but in your KDP dashboard, or I think there's a way you can sign up to be part of the beta program, but it's through KDP and it's got that virtual voice. You can pick from like 10 different AI voices.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the AI and I'm not a fan.
Okay.
I think AI is causing a lot of problems within the creative industry.
Oh, for sure.
If we're not careful, it's going to end up destroying the creative industry.
I absolutely agree with that. I am just of the stance of you can already do a virtual voice through your Kindle. So if people can do that without my permission or my whatever, and I can't afford to hire a voice actor for my own Audible or audiobook, because that's expensive. And I've been burnt too many times to ever give up my rights again for anything. This just seemed like a better compromise and to have it for something, you know. And I've had people, like, not rage out on me. Everybody's been pretty respectful. But, yeah, have that side of it. And I don't like the AI for writing. And my books could be used to train AI and stuff. And I have that disclaimer now that I don't allow my books to be trained for. So I do agree with it. But Amazon already offers it. So,
yeah,
it was kind of get on the bus and mama gets her pay for it too. And I'm not charging what most audiobooks are, because it is virtual voice. But I've had fans asking me for a while to do it. But also, I have a problem with my ADHD listening to voice actors and listening to audiobooks, but I can listen to the virtual voice. I'm okay with that. It doesn't give me ick on my ears. So I don't know. Just for me, it seems like a viable option.
Yeah. I can understand that aspect to some extent, but at the same time, I mean, trying to replace audio narrators, and narrators have a hard, they have a valid, viable job. And I don't want to see those arguments being turned around and used to replace me in 10 years.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever get rid of narrators. I mean, people will try everything, but you're still never going to get rid of it all. I think there's too much of a desire and too much of a, I mean, you could make the same argument for authors who read their own audiobooks versus not hiring actors.
Yeah.
That they're taking away the job for, and I've heard that argument, which to me, it's my book, it's my creation. Don't judge me if I want to read it myself.
Yeah.
I've always felt
that.
But if this is the format that I want to use for my work, that's my choice. And but I'm not charging the same that I would if I hired a voice actor and made it for a full, you know, immersive experience like a voice actor audiobook. But I agree with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I like having the more options because it is expensive. It's really expensive to produce your own audiobook. But
yes, I'm aware. I'm aware.
You know, you've done it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't produce any of my audiobooks. I've looked at the cost.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you've been through the process. You know.
Yeah, I've been through the process and I've looked at the costs and it's something that if things with the Kickstarter go well, it's something I might start looking at for some of my books.
Yeah.
As I, because there's a couple, there are a couple that I would like to see in audio that I might look at doing with Kickstarter if I develop enough of a following through that avenue. But I am aware of the cost. I know they are expensive and I know it can be an issue.
Yeah. I honestly feel like if it wasn't already being done with Kindle and I didn't get a say in it and I didn't get a vote, I might have that stance. Like, I don't allow AI anything for my covers. I still do my own covers. I won't do generated photos and, you know.
Yeah. And I hate the way AI is taking over every single freaking art platform out there. I mean, people think that Adobe has something going on there that they've come up with an ethical way to do art on Adobe because they pay the artists this, this, and this, except everything, all the generative art programs out there, they are based on unethical platform to begin with because they used scraped and stolen art.
Yeah.
It's just like the ChatGPT. It's based on scraped and stolen written work.
And it, to me, a lot of now the education tools and like people coming out with degrees, it's like, have you used any of those programs? Because do you think your degree is worth as much as mine was that didn't have any of that? Like, there's a difference between that type of tool and like when you're using Photoshop and people are calling it AI, but you know, the tool to like cut out hair. They always had that tool. It's just a bit better now, which it would have been, and don't call that AI. You know,
somebody was trying to compare Grammarly to AI, and Grammarly is not AI. Grammarly is an editing tool. There is a big difference. You still wrote
Word always had that. That's not AI. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. The same thing for Photoshop. You have to stop lumping AI together as just tools that were already there. And the last point that I really kind of want to make is that everybody needs to not take a step back, but also just examine it on a case-by-case basis and stop going to the extremes. Because we've been in the industry long enough where we saw this 10, 15 years ago, even a little bit before I came onto the scene. It was kind of more raging when I became an author that ebooks were going to destroy the industry. Anybody who wasn't doing traditional with some of the smaller publishers and didn't have an agent and wasn't doing, you know, the old school way or wasn't doing only print books, these evil ebooks were going to destroy the industry and publishing houses were going to fall. The way readers read were going to die. And it was all going to become this new agey. It's all crap. It didn't turn out that way. I never thought it was going to turn out that way. We just have more options. The people read more than ever. You have more access to books. You have more access to different genres that I never thought were going to be a thing. We had somebody recently that did inanimate, I can never say that word, object romance. And all these different genres have sparked because of all the different options. And that's what I think the virtual voice is. I mean, we all know that there's a human being behind Siri and Alexa. They've done interviews and stuff. That's what these virtual voices are. Is it the same as a paid actor? No. But just because there are movies, people do not stop going to theater. Just because there are ebooks does not mean print books died. I think the print books are selling better than ever. It's just an alternative format. And that's how I feel on the topic. And I think that's how people need to see it because it's ethically done. Any type of business model, any type of AI, any of it that is unethically done by stealing or scanning art that then is, you know, compiled to make quote unquote new art, which it's not, that's just theft. That's the main difference. And I think that's my view on it. People can disagree, but that's how I see it. And that's why, you know, renting a movie is not the same as going to the opera or going to a Broadway show, though. And that's why I'm not pricing mine the same as with a voice actor, you know, audiobook, because it's not the same. But it's just another option for people to have. And that's what I want to give my fans. I want to give a big thanks to Shiloh for joining me for such a fun conversation. Also to all our fans for checking out this podcast. I hope you like what you heard and decide to stick around. Please make sure to subscribe to the Fat Books podcast on YouTube or Spotify, or that little purple icon on your Apple device. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date on who we're recording with and when episodes are coming out. Now let's hear a bit about what Shiloh's got going on.
My most recent release, I believe, was Crashed, which is the final book in my Barnes Brothers series. The story involves Travis and the girl that he fell in love with, Isabel, when he was a teenager. Things did not work out well. The book is about two reunited lovers, and it's kind of about found family and second chances. That came out, I believe, in November. And that was my Shiloh Walk release. And then I had a short story from J.C. Daniels. It was set in the Kit Kobani universe, and it was just called Chang. It's a prequel about one of the secondary characters in it. And I'm currently working on two stories. One is Blade's End, which is the final book in the Kit Kobani series that a lot of my readers are kind of very patiently, not patiently, biting their nails waiting on. And the other is called I Choose the Bear, and it's a bear shapeshifter romance. And if you've been following the I Choose the Bear debate, yes. I think I saw a picture. It was a bear sitting at a picnic table, literally sitting at a picnic table. And he was like, I don't know, guy, just stop being creepy and there won't be a problem. And that picture right there, and I got the idea. So I started writing it, and I'm on like the fifth chapter. I've posted like the opening to the first three chapters on my Facebook page.
Thanks for staying till the end, and hope you enjoyed it.
Life of Riley, Kevin MacLeod, incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.